This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, I'll talk with the Palestinian writer and poet Mossab Abu Toa about his harrowing escape from the siege of Gaza. That's the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.
What do ketchup, yogurt, and quicksand all have in common? They're non-Newtonian fluids, or oobleck.
Non-Newtonian fluid really is a fascinating material that can adapt and dramatically change its behavior all by itself depending on how it is forced to flow.
It's Wednesday, December 20th, but just like every day, today is Science Friday. I'm Sci-Fi producer Kathleen Davis. We're used to a certain level of consistency in life. If I reach for the orange juice day after day, I assume it's going to be the same liquidy goodness each time. There's a class of materials that don't operate this way. They may fool you into thinking they're a liquid, but with a little pressure, they move into solid territory. We'll talk about the science of oobleck in just a bit, but first, how cocoa bean husks could get a new life as a renewable resource.
On cocoa farms around the world, husks are stripped off cocoa beans, leaving 20 million tons of plant waste to biodegrade. These husks are a source of lignin, the substance that gives plants their rigidity. A new study published in ACS Sustainable Chemistry and Engineering says that lignin from the leftover cocoa bean husks could be an alternative for lots of different fossil fuel-based products like plastics and flame retardants. Joining me to talk about this is my guest, Dr. Rigoberto Advíncula, material scientist with the Oak Ridge National Laboratory and the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. Welcome to Science Friday.
Well, thank you so much, Ira. I'm happy to be with your show.
Thank you. Let's talk about lignin. What do we currently use it for?
Well, lignin is actually a byproduct of the pulp industry. It's well known in the biosciences that you need lignin to hold the cellulose and basically give the rigidity in plants. But right now, a lot of it is thrown away.
Huh. And so we want to save it from the cocoa husks.
Yes. So like any other agro industry, they have a lot of biomass that includes lignin and cellulose. And they've been finding that there are many uses for lignin for a variety of things, including plastics, flame retardants, adhesives, and so on.
Give us an idea on how you extract it from the cocoa husks and other plants.
So basically, lignin binds the cellulose, hemicellulose, derived from a big unit called fibril. And you have to do some chemical treatment, dissolution with a solvent. And when you do that, you fractionate them basically into the cellulose and the lignin, which in our language basically is a mess. Lignin is a very heterogeneous molecule or biomolecule. But when you process it or pyrolyze it properly, you get all sorts of very useful stuff that, for example, can be used for making further complex and very useful chemicals.
You said it was a mess. What are the challenges of biorefining these materials? How do you get high-quality lignin?
Yes. So lignin is a class of what we call heterogeneous phenolics or alcohols. They are highly branched, and depending on the plant source, they can be very different in terms of the aromatic content and the amount of phenolic content. So one has to carefully understand the heterogeneity or the variance of chemical intermediates you can extract from these various plant sources. So for example, with cocoa and coconut and wood, they have different fractions which has to be separated in order to use them for a variety of chemical intermediates.
Mm-hmm. And you already mentioned the possibility of using them for plastic flame retardants. Are there any other kinds of sustainable materials that might show up?
Yes. So cellulose, obviously, is a type of polysaccharide, you know, the same as the class of starch that we eat, but cellulose is the stuff that is not easily digested. They've been finding many uses for cellulose beyond the paper industry, including nanomaterials, including different types of bio-derived plastic. On the other hand, the lignin is actually a rich source of chemical intermediates when derivatized, for example, with phosphonate groups or lots of nitrogen. That's what makes it very useful, for example, in flame retardant applications. So depending on the type of biomass, basically you have to classify the type of lignin chemistry you can derive, and therefore the biorefining, solvolysis, pyrolysis, these are all steps that are done in order to make them more useful.
Mm-hmm. Now, we've heard about bioplastics, but bioplastics are still plastic, right? Does extracting lignin from cocoa husks solve this problem?
So the cellulose actually has been around for a long, long time. It's basically your natural plastic, and therefore biodegradable in many cases. Polylactic acid, which is derived from other plant or even bacterial sources, is actually a biodegradable plastic that is useful for packaging these days. Lignin, on the other hand, is a different kind of plastic. Because of the phenolic and alcohol groups present, one has to do some type of condensation polymerization to convert them into what we call thermosets. So when we say thermoset, these are plastics that are not easily molded and reformed with temperature. A good example of a thermoset is epoxy. And epoxy has many uses, for example, in the fiber composite industry. So in this case, lignin really is a rich playground to do more chemistry to derive different types of plastics and materials.
Is there a business then that needs to be set up to extract and reuse all these husks that are lying around?
Yes, good question. So a lot of the value depends really on the use of catalyst and the lower energy, meaning less cost to convert them into something useful. So for example, many companies, normally they will just consider this as waste. But then the new chemistries that are being developed, even with some startup companies, they've been finding ways to efficiently extract the useful intermediate and therefore get more value out of it. So a good example is the lignin can be derived into what we call monolignins, essentially very small molecules derived from lignin. These are closer to other types of aromatic intermediates that we use for solvents, for use in shampoo or plasticizers, for different types of chemical intermediates to make more complex molecules. So the more they can be purified into monolignins, the more they become useful as replacements for fossil-derived chemical intermediates.
Fascinating. Good to hear about this, and I hope we get to see some products made from the husk soon.
Yes. Yeah, exciting, because that means you can take any waste, biomass waste, and derive value out of it.
Yeah. Well, that's what we'd like to do. Thank you, Dr. Rigoberto Advíncula, material scientist with the Oak Ridge National Laboratory and the University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Thank you. My pleasure.
This week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, one man's harrowing escape from the siege of Gaza.
It was the first time in my life I see an Israeli soldier, which is, I think, very strange. You have been under bombardment, you have been living under siege and occupation, and you haven't seen any soldier in your life, but you are bombed from the sky.
I'll talk with writer Mossab Abutoa on the New Yorker Radio Hour from WNYC Studios. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
You may be familiar with a common science demonstration done in classrooms. Here it is. If you mix cornstarch and water in the right proportions, you wind up with a material that seems to defy the rules of physics. It flows and settles like a liquid, like you would expect it to, but when you try to pick it up quickly or stir it, it stiffens up. The same thing happens with silly putty, quicksand, and paint. This type of material is called a non-Newtonian fluid. It also has a more fun name, oobleck. And for a long time, it's been hard to prove why exactly this material acts like this. But now scientists have a better understanding of the underlying mechanism, and this understanding could help us create new, smart materials. Joining me to talk about this is my guest, Dr. Heinrich Jaeger, professor of physics at the James Franck Institute at the University of Chicago. This study was done in collaboration with the James Franck Institute and the Pritzker School. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Ira. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. You know, I have done this many times. I love creating quicksand with cornstarch and water. And if you put your hand in it, and if you lift it up slowly, you can easily remove your hand. But if you try to jerk it up quickly, the cornstarch and water becomes like a solid. Please explain what exactly is going on here. What is a non-Newtonian fluid?
Yes. So non-Newtonian fluid really is a fascinating material that can adapt and dramatically change its behavior all by itself, depending on how it is forced to flow. And what I want to do to explain that is contrast that with what we would call a Newtonian fluid. Typically, that's a pure liquid like water, and how easily it flows depends on its resistance, its viscosity, which is simply a material's property. So it does not depend on how you handle it. Imagine you move your hand through water, it puts up some resistance to flow, and that is this viscosity. But a non-Newtonian fluid now can adapt its viscosity smartly. It can flow more easily, for example, when we push it, or it can dramatically resist flow when we push it. And these are two extreme cases of non-Newtonian fluids that we call either shear thinning or shear thickening.
Well, can you explain that exactly? What's going on in the particles inside that dish where my hand is?
Yes. So the prototypical non-Newtonian fluid is a dispersion or suspension of small particles in a liquid, right? And you might think that the liquid lubricates these particles as they flow past each other.
Right. Exactly.
But, and that can happen, right? And in particular, this can happen for so-called shear thinning fluids. But there's also the case, particularly when you add a lot of particles, where they get pushed together to a point that actually the liquid between them is expelled and they get into direct contact. And now they interact by friction. And that can dramatically increase the resistance to flow. In fact, it can even solidify.
Yeah. Now I get it. That was good. Do you find these kinds of non-Newtonians in nature, or are they all man-made?
No, they in fact, they exist in nature. So I told you that typically pure liquids are Newtonian, so they don't display that behavior. But when particulate matter is added, then this non-Newtonian behavior emerges. And an example is blood.
Blood.
Blood, for example, is shear thinning. It flows more easily if it's forced harder. Then there is paint. Paint also often is formulated by putting additives in there such that it will flow more easily when you brush it. That's what you want, to get it off the brush onto the wall. But then when it's on the wall, you don't want it to keep flowing. You want it to resist flow. And that's exactly a shear thinning behavior, right? So the opposite of oobleck.
Yeah. This is Science Friday from WNYC Studios. Why has it taken so long to understand how these ooblecks work?
In part, you know, these shear thickening, oobleck type non-Newtonian fluids, they're rarer. And they are so utterly counterintuitive. Just imagine any material, I force it, I push it, I would imagine it should get weaker. Oobleck is now doing exactly the opposite. It becomes stronger. It potentially even solidifies, right?
Right.
And it does that even reversibly. It goes back and forth. If I take the forcing off, if I don't push it, it just reverses back to a liquid. And this counterintuitive behavior is complex. It has been hard to understand. And maybe historically that had also to do with the fact that two very different communities were looking at that. Initially, it was the rheology community. And I think they started basically from the idea I take pure liquid, like water, and I add particles, a few, and see what might happen, right?
Right.
Did you know that the person who was one of the first to calculate what would happen if you would put a few particles in a liquid and how its viscosity would change was no other than Albert Einstein?
Really?
That was his, it's a part of his PhD thesis, in fact.
Wow, that's something I'm sure a lot of us didn't know. But we like to know that now. You suggest that now that we better understand how non-Newtonian fluids work, that they could be used to make new materials. Well, what kinds of materials are you thinking of?
Well, so we are very much interested in making materials, formulating materials that all by themselves, if you want, autonomously adapt to changes in conditions, right? You don't need a computer to tell the material what to do, no feedback. So, you know, if you want an oobleck-like material, you want one that becomes more resistive to flow. And that could be useful, for example, for impact mitigation. Think of wearable garments impregnated by fluids like that, that would take up impact, that would help you maybe protecting against sport injuries, injuries at the workplace, prevent you from hurting yourself when you fall. There are other applications that have been proposed. One that I like in particular is speed bumps.
Speed bumps. Oh, yeah. Now I see it. It's a lot. It's like lying squishy flat when it's not being touched, but then you hit it in the car and now it's suddenly a speed bump.
Exactly. So the idea with this non-Newtonian shear thickening fluid is that the harder you force it, the more resistive it gets, right? So a car rolling over one of those at low speed would essentially just push the fluid aside and roll right over or through it. And if you go at faster speeds, the bump would get solid and you would notice.
That is cool. I like that. So you say it could be used in clothing. What other kinds of uses, let's say in clothing, you know, stab resistant because it would harden up? What other uses possibly if wearable stuff?
Well, I should explain maybe a little bit more. Of course, there are many ways of protecting yourself against impact, let's say during sports, right? But typically, this implies a garment or a part of a garment that is relatively rigid. And that could also then prevent you in terms of mobility. And what would be really nice is a protective system that is very much not affecting your mobility when nothing happens, but then suddenly hardens up the moment there's an actual impact. And that's exactly what such a non-Newtonian fluid could do. So we would combine the fluid with another fabric, obviously, into a protective system.
That's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank my guest, Dr. Heinrich Jaeger, professor of physics at the James Franck Institute at the University of Chicago. This study was done in collaboration with the James Franck Institute and the Pritzker School.
Thank you, Ira. Thanks for having me.
And that's all the time that we have for now. A lot of folks helped make the show happen, including
Annie Nero, Emma Gomez,
Charles Bergquist,
Danielle Johnson,
and many more. Next time, how one author is working to make romance novels a bit more scientific. But for now, I'm Sci-Fry producer Kathleen Davis. Thanks for listening.